This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
Checkpoint Intimates. Welcome back to another Checkpoint Internet. I'm joined with Liam Esler, our guest from the last show. I'm Archer. It's my first intimate host. So,
wow, congratulations.
This is exciting. Very
exciting.
Yeah. We're talking about romance in games. It's quite a topic for you.
It is quite a topic for me.
Why? Why is that? Tell us. Tell our listeners.
Because I'm really romantic, Archer. Like, let's be honest.
Yeah. All in the eyes.
It's all in the eyes. No, I have always really enjoyed the romantic aspects of games, particularly RPGs. Like, I love characters and character development. Mm-hmm. So both as like a player and a creator, I think that romance is like a really interesting part of games from many, many different perspectives. But it's particularly topical given that everyone's playing Mass Effect Andromeda right now and sort of complaining or really enjoying the romances in that.
Absolutely. I'm playing it myself. I'm a bit disappointed that there's only the two gay male romances because I'm like, oh, what's some options? At least I want some alien options.
When do we ever get options?
We don't get options. Well, at least we had Iron Bull. Like,
we did. He was something very different.
Which is excellent.
Which was so exciting. And I think that BioWare are also working really hard to sort of extend some of that mm-hmm. in future patches, I believe. I don't know if they're going to include a new character or make someone like Jarl romanceable by men.
I would be so happy with that.
I think there were hints in the game files that originally he was intended to be bisexual, but I'm not entirely sure. So
they could have just made his entire race not consider gender and then...
Yeah, absolutely. I just really wanted to romance Liam. Like, that shirtless scene. Ugh.
Liam wants to romance Liam. Mm, yep. No, not going to read into that. Yeah, he did do a shirtless scene, and then Jarl was also shirtless, but that was less
and
appealing.
And then it was... Was it the first alien butt in the Mass Effect series?
It might be. I don't know. Do we have, Asari butt at some point?
Oh, maybe we do. Maybe we do have some Asari butt.
There's definitely Asari strippers.
There are. That's true. But I believe they're clothed.
Yes.
But yes, going back to the topic at hand, romance has always been sort of a passion of mine. And I was lucky enough to write three out of four of the romances in Baldur's Gate 2 Enhanced Edition.
Wow.
And I also wrote, well, I sort of did the structure for and helped write all of the romances in Baldur's Gate Siege of Dragonspear as well. And
what was it like doing that? So actually working on these dynamics between characters that people would play through?
It's super interesting. I started writing sort of romantic content and like sort of what we label friend talks, like the kind of like the non-romantic talks that you have with a character that are like non-plot related.
Platonic conversations?
Yeah, like platonic conversations. As a modder, so I used to mod Baldur's Gate 2. And
you just want everyone to be friends. Let's be friends.
I just wanted to be friends with everyone and then romance them. And so I...
Don't read into that either, listeners.
No. And so I ended up just doing it myself. I created mods to allow people to sort of get to know these characters better. And I really enjoyed that process. So when I went to work for Beamdog, I looked for opportunities that would allow me to sort of continue learning about that and experiment and sort of expand my skill set in mm-hmm. that way. And I was lucky enough to be given those romances to write. And they were such an interesting process because romance in games is a really, really difficult thing to get right for many, many reasons, particularly from like a structural one. So the traditional structure of RPG romances is there's a getting to know you segment. And then there's a like a flirtatious segment.
The getting to know you segment, and that's where they come out, apparently.
Yes. And then basically the characters, you sort of get to know them better. There's like romantic tension. There's some kind of problem that you have to help them overcome. And then it reaches a stage where it's like committed, usually where it becomes a monogamous relationship.
Polys exist, guys.
Yeah. Thanks. And then also the climax of the relationship is a literal climax. They usually have sex.
Yay.
And so this is problematic in a number of ways because in many RPG romances, basically we train players to say what the NPC, the non-player character, wants to hear all the way through. And in exchange, they will get sex at the end of it. So we're encouraging people to be nice guys to like sort of be friendly and nice and expect sex at the end of that.
But I'm a nice guy. Why you no sleep with me?
Exactly. And so when I'm writing romance and when we try to write romance for RPGs, we have to keep this in mind and try to find ways that we can subvert this. We can change the structure, the way that we create it. And so Baldur's Gate Siege of Dragonspear was really interesting. Sorry, not Baldur's Gate Siege of Dragonspear. That was very interesting, but Baldur's Gate 2 Enhanced Edition. Creating those romances was really interesting because I had a half-orc, chaotic, evil blaggard named Dawn.
Mm-hmm.
And I had Rasad, who was a neutral monk, neutral good monk, I think. And also Hexat, who was a lesbian vampire. And so these are very, very unique, interesting characters, and trying to create romantic content for them that was really interesting was a cool experience.
I'd really like to see romantic content like be more involved in the actual plot narrative
yes.
that's happening, because it just seems to be like a side questy sort of deal at the moment, even in like games where it's a heavy part of the experience of the player. So even in BioWare games, it's still like a side quest.
It is fairly ancillary, and you can skip over it entirely. And that is actually quite the intention. So I was talking to Mike, the creative director of the Dragon Age series. Mm-hmm. Mike, I know I can't remember his name. He's pretty great, but
Mike Smith. Yeah.
Sure. we were talking about how at PAX East, how the romances were structured and how for BioWare, they try to create this core game experiences, which is really good. And then they create external layers that add to that experience that not everyone will enjoy, but a part of their audience will enjoy.
Mm-hmm.
And so there are actually many parts of this. And part of that is like the exploration elements, the collection elements, and the romance elements are one of them.
But yeah, so I feel like having something more core to the plot will allow for that more in-depth and less linear narrative to the romance sequences. Like how in Mass Effect 2, if you romance Caden or Ashley, they would feel betrayed by you joining Cerberus,
yeah,
and then not join you again. I feel that's an actual relationship that has problems that you need to work through, and that seems to be something that's missing in a lot of these
yes.
times.
And there's also for anyone who's played Alpha Protocol, which was a game that Obsidian made, that did actually have romantic content in it, and it was it wasn't central to the plot, but it was sort of put into the story. Like, it was a part of the primary story. It wasn't separate. And so it was really, really well integrated in a way that made it feel natural and realistic. And then you play, like, the Uncharted games, where, like, it's not like an RPG where you sort of choose who you romance or whatever, but the relationships presented in the Uncharted series are really, really well done. They're really, really well thought through. They're well structured. You believe them. And so what I want to see is us, like, take those structures and that excellence and bring that to RPGs.
To allow that sort of structure and interaction between the characters, but
yeah,
still
exactly.
have the player be able to make decisions about what's happening with it.
We want that depth. Mm-hmm. And, you know, a romance is all about, from a developer's perspective, sort of engaging a player more in a game and making them care more about the game world through a character. And so more realistic and deep romantic content for many players is a really, really great way to engage them in a story. And so for me as a developer, I place a high priority on that, which is why I sort of force myself to work on that content whenever I can, because it's so much fun.
I originally only got into Mass Effect because I heard that they had gay male romance options.
Really?
And I wanted to check that out. It had actually been given to me by a friend while I was in high school. I never really like got very far into it, because the first one especially was a bit jarring.
Mm.
And it was a bit clunky. But then I heard like, oh, it features this thing, and I'm like, okay, well, I'll give it a go. And then I walked around trying to see who I could romance and how it worked, and I was like, oh, well, doesn't work how I wanted to at all. But then I actually got really engaged in the story and the characters and played through it, and it's now one of my favorite series of all time. But just having that level of diversity can just draw in an audience that wasn't even there before.
Exactly.
And it's not necessarily going to... We hope it's not going to alienate your core audience as well by adding in just a variety of characters, even though...
Most of the research shows that it doesn't. And
yes.
It, you know, ends up being a positive all around. More sales for the game. People are happier. You know, people really enjoy the experience. They can see themselves represented. So there's no reason we shouldn't be creating more diverse content.
Oh, definitely. And it adds into... it allows for experiences that people wouldn't see in their day-to-day life as well. Like, I fantasize about, like, straight boys accidentally flirting with Iron Bull because he's very dominant.
Yeah.
And that is not something that they would be immediately comfortable experiencing.
Have you played Coming Out on Top?
Yes.
So Coming Out on Top is a point-and-click sort of narrative game, a visual novel that's like a dating sim.
I played through it as quickly as possible and failed every romance.
There's some really, really interesting romance options in there, and the developer, Obscura Soft, made some really, really interesting choices. She did a lot of research, and that's a really interesting example of sort of a different kind of romance in games. There's also the recently released Lady Killer in a Bind, which is a game, it's a visual novel that is about sort of, has BDSM themes and is really, really sort of, it's quite a complex game about social structure. And it is one of the best written romance games you will ever play. It's by Christine Love, and you can buy it on Steam. It's a fantastic experience that, you know, is really outside of the mainstream. I mean, we don't have many games that talk about BDSM in a sort of romantic context at all, or even any context, like in games. Like, this is just not something that we come across.
Definitely. Sexual diversity is just something that isn't explored in society in general nearly enough. And when it is, they struggle to get away from the stigmatization of it being like, ooh, this is shady and like not something that quote unquote normal people associate with.
Yeah, well, if you remember, like when people got to the content with Iron Bull in Dragon Age Inquisition, where it sort of was revealed that he sort of liked BDSM, like there was a huge outcry. And that was really interesting and kind of depressing to watch. But Lady Killer on a Bind sort of takes that to a whole new level. It's an R18 plus game. It's super interesting. And if you're into that, I definitely suggest checking it out. But the indie community right now, the reason I bring these up is because the indie community is doing some really, really interesting things that are very, very different from the mainstream. And so if you really enjoy romance content in games, like I would definitely recommend getting on Steam and looking at visual novels, particularly as another sort of outlet. There are some really, really interesting things going on that companies like BioWare aren't capable of exploring because the audience isn't big enough. And so one day I would love to sort of take some of those ideas.
And then at the same time, their audience is too big to try and to explore all these things.
Exactly.
Because they'll just, the waves will be too big.
Exactly.
That it will create. Unfortunately.
Unfortunately.
Yeah, exploring romance and relationships in games is something that's been happening for years now. And we're starting to build quite a library of experiences if you're willing to go out there and find them. Steam, as you mentioned, is a great avenue for that sort of thing.
Mm.
I always find, despite them not being discrete romance, it's not romances, but it is a matter of building relationships and handling things is how Telltale operates their games. It's all platonic in how that's handled, but also when it comes to titles like The Walking Dead, survival mechanics integrated into how you bind a relationship with people and how you handle that relationship. And that's ingrained in the narrative, how you handle those relationships. I'd like to see that more in some RPGs where what you're doing and how you manage your people is more integral to the plot line. And what you do in the full game will affect the relationships with people, which I really liked about Dragon Age, except they numbered it instead of making it more interactable. It's like, oh, Vivian disapproves again. Like, when's she gonna leave? Like, I'd like to see that actually be impactful. Like, oh, Vivian disapproved with like literally everything I did, but she's still here coming out on excursions.
Well, I think that so BioWare did some really interesting things in Dragon Age 2, which was like much maligned by many gamers, but from a story and a romance perspective, it was fascinating because you could romance characters that both liked you and that you antagonized. So there were like hate mances, essentially, with characters who strongly disliked you but were highly attracted to you. And that antagonistic kind of relationship had some really, really interesting sort of overtones and allowed BioWare to explore relationships that normally we don't get to see in games.
Yeah, even if our half-style are not depicted as like the perfect relationship as a lot of the time they are in games because it's so linear a lot of the time.
Yeah.
Whereas you have this dynamic of like, oh, you agitate them, but like that's an intensity that can like be a great way to kindle a strong relationship with people.
And I think that one thing that we are going to see moving forward is more of that, more exploration of different types of romance. And one thing that I'm really excited that I hope we get to explore is more than just the meet cute. Like, so most games sort of see the initial part of the relationship, like we get to the point where they commit and then they sort of commit to one another and then, oh, there's a climax and the game has ended. I want to see romances where the couple has to work through problems.
Definitely a struggle. I want to see a struggle.
Yeah, I want to see some interesting stuff with the, like, what happens at the 2-year point? What happens at the 5-year point? This was something that I wanted to see in games like Dragon Age 2, which take place over a period of time, mm-hmm. but unfortunately we just didn't see that much.
Well, thank you very much for joining me today, Liam.
It's been a lovely chat. Thank you so much for having me.
About romance in games. I know we talk about BioWare a lot, but they're kind of the big guys.
They are the big guys, yeah.
Thank you very much. This has been Checkpoint on Joy 94.9.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help us keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.